Good evening and welcome to Keyframe, the animation podcast as part of the Geek Show podcast family. My name is Mark, and with me we have Andrew.
Hello.
Tucky.
Hello.
And Rob.
Lies.
Damn it.
I just noticed how it was getting more and more seductive as things went on.
No, I was saying lies to Tucky's rather sexy hello.
Are you trying to say it wasn't sexy?
No, I was saying it lies. It promises all sorts. But
I'm wearing a satin negligee, slightly see-through, just because I'm a tease.
See, that proves it's a lie. You can pronounce negligee.
Say you call it a negligee, I call that cosplay.
I call it a negligle.
Welcome to the Sexy Lingerie Podcast here.
So, how is everyone this week?
Alright.
Not bad, not bad. Just tired and cold and half snowed in.
Half? It's already all melted, yeah, man.
It's melting now around here as well. So, yeah. The country is no longer racist. Hooray for that.
I don't know, the Beast from the East sounds kind of anti-Russian.
Well, yeah.
That's not its actual name, though. Its actual name was Anti-Cyclone Hartmut.
Yeah, but the thing is, it got really weird watching the weather report because it made it sound like they were filming some kind of porn movie because they had the Beast from the East and it was meeting Storm Emma. And the two of them combined. And you're like, what
mixed
is going
boxing
on?
From Rocky?
Exactly.
We all know there's going to be hentai of the Beast of the East at some point.
Oh, there will be, if there isn't already.
There probably will be. Anyway, well, it's only a matter of time before weather is actually anthropomorphized by the Japanese. So
it already has been.
Oh, it is. I'm actually genuinely... Oh, my God. It exists.
A couple of the hurricanes, Hurricane Irma, for example, was anthropomorphized to...
It already exists.
All right, people, let's just leave that
quickly
to
moving on from one section of the internet to the other. We've got Wreck-It Ralph trailer.
Yes, Wreck-It Ralph breaks the internet, apparently, allegedly. See,
everyone breaks the internet these days. Is the internet that feeble?
Yeah, I don't like this phrase, breaks the internet. It doesn't break the internet. It just gets a lot of traction on a particular website. Doesn't mean it breaks the internet.
I mean, the DDoS does.
See, a DDoS attack on the internet itself, or on every single website on the internet, would possibly break the internet. But that is something that would be impossible to do, because we don't have the actual computers in the world to do such a thing.
You know, there's a bunker in Russia where there's a lot of servers where they're waiting.
That's what Putin meant.
But that's what I mean. Going by numbers, we don't actually have the computing capacity to actually break the internet. Breaking the internet is one of those phrases that I really don't like. It's the same with, like, oh, trigger saved anime.
So when you said trigger, you're talking about Only Fools and Horses trigger.
See, this is the thing. I really wanted to, if it was trigger from Only Fools and Horses saving anime, I would say yes, absolutely.
Oh, please.
He hand-painted Gurren Lagann by himself.
Yes,
all the characters were called Dave originally.
Yeah, all of them called Dave.
Believe in the Dave that believes in you.
Put on a shirt, it'll sell millions.
Can you imagine when, what's her face? Is it Ryoko? What's her name? Ryoko, was it? Oh,
yeah.
You know,
Ryoko.
Ryoko, when she first turns up and says to Kamina, "You're right, Dave."
That's just brilliant.
Mega Ralph will not break the internet. He barely broke an 80s arcade machine. So, you know.
Yeah, I reckon Wreck-It Ralph is going to be like a burp on the internet.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
He's going to become a meme.
He already is a meme.
That's how they're going to do it, isn't it? He's going to become a meme on the internet so everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
But... Oh, so basically Uganda Knuckles is going to make a guest appearance.
Yeah, Uganda Knuckles is it's sold last month.
That's this month's meme.
This month's meme is always and always shall be cats.
No, it's that bloke who's sitting in the chair. He's like, change my mind. That guy.
No. That's only until people start realizing the glory that is Keanu Reeves doing Squarespace adverts. Have you seen those?
Is that the one where he's on the bike and he's like, should I build a website about bikes? Yes, you love bikes.
Yeah, that's it's like you watch the, you know, the Sauvage one that Johnny Depp does, which is so pretentious. It's like you watched that and went, Johnny, what are you doing? This is how you do an advert.
But I like motorcycles. Yeah, you do like motorcycles. I should build a website on Foursquare about it. Okay. What's going on here? Don't ask me. I'm just Keanu Reeves.
Tucky might remember this, but I don't think Mark or Andrew will. Do you remember Young Einstein?
Mel Brooks.
No, that's Young Frankenstein. Young Einstein was a film where Einstein was apparently from Tasmania, and the guy who played the role of Einstein, or the young Einstein, was a guy called Yahoo Serious.
Wow.
Fantastic parents.
Yeah, and the whole thing of him coming up with E equals MC squared was to put a better head on beer.
Somebody's not vaguely remember this film. It must have been on the TV or something when I was little.
Yeah, and the thing is, as weird as that sounds, I'm just going by the trailer, but I'm not excited about Wreck-It Ralph. I'd rather watch Young Einstein.
Honestly, it's like I said a few weeks ago that I really liked Wreck-It Ralph. And when I watched the trailer, I felt nothing from it. Maybe it was the cameos that kind of made us enjoy Wreck-It Ralph more than I probably would have enjoyed otherwise, because there wasn't any cameos or anything in the trailer. So I was just like, oh, so it's all about Wreck-It Ralph, is it?
Yeah. I mean, if at some point Cameo did turn up, you know, strutting his stuff with his red jockstrap singing Word Up, then, you know, maybe I'd be more interested in the film. But then it definitely wouldn't be for kids.
Definitely not.
Do you know what people are saying it is?
What?
A lot of people say it's the Emoji Movie Part 2.
It could be. This is the thing.
I can see that. I can see it.
They do say Pride Comes Before a Fall, and they were inordinately proud of Wreck-It Ralph, and they had a reason to be. You know, it had all sorts of references. It massaged the egos of all the nostalgia fans and everybody like that, with the Aerith Lives and all the other graffiti and Qbert and all that nonsense. But Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet is a totally different thing. An 8-bit character hits the internet. What's he going to find?
Gaia Online.
Wreck-It Ralph meets the Beast from the East.
Well, think about it. What are the two biggest things on the internet?
Fanfiction.net.
Nope.
Porn and Donald Trump's hairpiece.
Well, half right. Porn and cats. Isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose.
They had a nod to the cats, and that was it. I'm like, I'm sorry, no, but there would be literal cats everywhere if the internet was a real place. There would be feral as well. Instead of McDonald's, you would have cat burger joints, because they has cheeseburger.
I think so, because it's the internet, we can already tell what jokes they're going to do with it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
The Emoji Movie has probably done those jokes already. I hate to say it, but it probably has.
You know, Ralph's going to be like, oh, cat picture, cat picture, cat picture. Oh, cat girl. Oh, dear. That's a naked cat girl. Look away, young child I can't remember the name of.
Vanellope von Schweetz.
Yeah, she was annoying.
Yeah, but it's Sarah Silverman. She's meant to be annoying. And I like Sarah Silverman, so don't knock her.
I wasn't knocking, I was just knocking an annoying child. But either way, no matter what happens with Wreck-It Ralph, we can rest assured that it will take number one in the animation category next year.
Yes.
Probably. Well, maybe two comes out.
It might if it wasn't for the other trailer. Now, the other one, I'll give you some information about this. It's debuting on April 8th on Adult Swim. And it's a quarter-hour series created by Chris Caracas from Supergirl and produced by Titmouse, who has the best name for an animation studio ever. And I'm sure Ghibli wouldn't have won that Oscar for Spirited Away if the company was called Titmouse. Can you imagine that at the Oscars? And the Oscar goes to Titmouse! So anyway, Christy Caracas has described the show, this particular show, as a hybrid of his style that incorporates the elements he loves about anime. And the show is all about. Do you guys know Rollerball or Speedball or something like that?
Deathball.
Deathball, yeah.
Yeah, Deathball. It's kind of a variation on that, where wars have ceased to exist and the Great Ruler has created this game. And the game is basically called Ball Masters, and this is called Ball Masters 9009. And what did you guys think?
It was certainly a thing that I watched.
It reminds me of Interdimensional Cable on Rick and Morty, where they've got ball fondlers. And I thought, yeah, it's ball fondlers, isn't it?
It felt like Rick and Morty trying to do a 1980s, early 1990s anime. That's what I kind of felt it was. It was trying to be, anyway.
Yeah, I got that vibe as well. I couldn't decide whether it was actually funny or not.
I didn't find it funny.
I wasn't really laugh out loud or anything like that. I was just kind of... it was just a thing, really. I don't know. I just kind of felt like I'd seen the humour so many times before.
Oh, you've been desensitised to it.
The Rick and Morty fan base last year kind of desensitised to that.
Oh, man. I've just totally got off Rick and Morty, but that's mainly because I'm in a couple of, like, meme groups of Rick and Morty stuff, and you just see the absolute most horrendous and heinous bombs of the fan base come to life as they go, oh my god, this is terrible.
It wasn't that. I just kind of felt Rick and Morty was quite funny, but I think the more it went on, it was just kind of, it was more of the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some of it, I thought was funny. But it stopped being funny quite fast. The whole, Pickle Rick!
One of the problems I found with Rick and Morty was the ending to season 2 was amazing.
Yeah.
Especially when Rick goes to prison and the guy says to him, what are you in for? He looks at the guy and just says, really sad, everything. Rick's daughter and her family are back on Earth, but Earth has totally changed. And that, I thought, were a phenomenal ending. And I was really looking forward to series 3, only to find that... everything has been set up so everything finishes after one episode. Like, so there's no underlying story arc or anything like that. We still don't know why Rick is in so much pain, because Bird Person did actually explain in season 2, Rick is in so much pain. That's what that flubber wobber dub dub, or whatever it is, he says, means.
Yeah.
So there's all of those undertones which kind of got ignored in season 3.
Yep.
In favour of humour.
I don't know, yeah. I feel Rick and Morty's going to end up kind of like Family Guy or The Simpsons, where it's just going to continue on and on for a few more seasons, even though it probably shouldn't.
And this is the thing, Rick and Morty, for the first 2 seasons, was a lot like Gintama, in that it had these serious undertones and serious elements which balanced the humour.
Yep.
But now it just doesn't have that.
I was pretty underwhelmed by season 3 myself, to be honest, but that's just... I enjoyed the first episode of season 3. I was like, oh, this is a good start. But then when the actual season 3 started, like, broadcasting that, I was watching it. I was just like, I'm not feeling it, just not feeling it. And there was one or two good moments, one or two funny moments, but the humour just dissipated really fast. I mean, as I was saying before, an entire episode about the whole Pickle Rick thing just didn't really do much for me.
Yep.
Well, screw you all. I loved it all. I don't care what you... The thing is, right, like you say, they did finish season 2 pretty strong.
Yeah.
But it's very self-aware of what it is and what it does.
Yeah.
And it's never promised anything fancy from the start. It's just hijinks with, like, a highbrow kind of sense of humour. Like, well, not highbrow, more... a higher intellect kind of thing. And the fandom absolutely f***ed it. If it wasn't, I'll tell you what, you take away the fandom from season 3 and it would be enjoyable.
I avoided the fandom completely for series 3. So my perspective on it is not based on what the fandom was saying or doing, because basically I just ignore them anyway. But for me, it was good for what it was as kind of a lighthearted piece, but it wasn't memorable.
Yeah, I thought it was good, but I thought it was a step back from the first 2 seasons. Yeah.
Well, no, that's why they finished off and they basically reset it at the end of season 3.
Hmm.
I mean, I like the fact that it's like, oh, it's just like we're going on one adventure and then they're focusing on the whole corruption in the Citadel of Rix. Like the whole evil Morty thing. They actually expanded on that a bit. I like the Avengers piss take. Like yeah. The whole superhero premise and whatnot.
But this is what I mean. They've got some good elements in there, but what I wanted was more from Rick. You know?
You'll get more from Rick next season, probably, because he is the big selling point. He is the USP for this series.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think
they've tried to focus a bit too much on Morty's situation when they should be focusing in on what Rick's doing. That's the only downfall I can see in it, but I dare say they will rectify it because...
Yeah,
they're really good at what they do, and they can feel and know what the fans want.
Thing is, it's Dan Harmon at the helm, and he's got his finger on the pulse. He has done ever since Community. So, yeah. Anyway, we're going to get an off topic there. I believe you have something for us, Mark.
Yeah, I have Princess Arete, or Princess Arete, or Princess
Arete.
Arete.
Fall yeah. Home.
So, this is a feature-length animated film from 2001.
Yeah.
And it was based on the 1983 story, The Clever Princess. Now, this is the first film from I'm going to mispronounce this mad here, from Tsunao Katabuchi, who went on to do In This Corner of the World and My, My Miracle. Two films I watched last year, and I absolutely loved them. And I know when we did our awards, In This Corner of the World was spoke very highly of.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I was like, I like them. I'm going to pick up the original one that they worked on first. It also was done by Studio 4C, which went on to do Mind Game later on as well. So in short, this is a film that was originally in 2001, but it is a film that I feel that we have seen time and time again in other media, not just like live action, but also in animated as well. It's about a young princess who spends a day watching the world outside her window, and she longs for a different life. She's kind of keeps an eye on, obviously, the common people, their day-to-day things. Everyone's competing, all the knights in the realm are competing for affection by trying to find magical items.
Wasn't the story that the king had said, whoever does this gets to marry my daughter?
Yeah, basically. So she's kind of in like an arranged marriage from someone who she doesn't know.
Yeah.
The king doesn't know her, even though yet. It's just whoever can satisfy the king more with whatever magical treasure they can bring.
I remember watching this several years ago, and I remember thinking that the main character, the princess, was a bit like Quasimodo in Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame, how he kept looking out the window and imagining where, you know, what life was like out there, and even sang a song about it with a very horrible close-up of his face.
Yeah, I can agree. And obviously, eventually, she does get taken away by a sorcerer called Bo and taken to a new, well, it's kind of like the other side of the world on his magical, weird drill airship thing. It's not really explained what it is. It just looks like an airship with a drill.
So his drill did pierce the heavens.
Yes, it was the drill that drilled things. And as soon as she's taken away from one tower, she's kind of locked in a dungeon of another, and she kind of just sits there for about half the film until she decides enough is enough. She snaps out of it and then kind of escapes. And honestly, this film, it's not a bad film, but it's so dragged on. It's like, this film was about an hour and a half, and I reckon for the amount of stuff that actually happens, they could have filled in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's about the amount of actual content. I'm not going to get too into it because this, like I said, this film, it felt, I was watching it, I was just like, this is brave. This is like 90% of the Disney films that's been coming out about a young girl where she doesn't need no man and stands on her own two feet. back in 2001, that was less common. We didn't see as many films of such a thing. But now it kind of feels like we've had a lot of films and a lot of TV series. I mean, we just recently had Ronya the Robber's Daughter, which kind of felt very similar to this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel special anymore. The animation isn't special whatsoever. The message back in 2001 was probably a little bit more unique than it is now. And it feels like a film of the times, but also doesn't feel like much whatsoever. It's got a nice story, but it's just kind of there, and it's bogged down in too much of nothing happening for it to really go anywhere.
I'd say really, that's fair. I remember trying to think about it in terms of, say, Nausicaa.
Yeah.
You know, from the whole wanting to go out and explore the world and stuff like that. And I remember thinking, it's lacking a lot of something, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was at the time.
The easiest way to explain it is it's a Ghibli film without the Ghibli magic.
Yeah.
It really feels like it's trying to be a Ghibli film, and it would kind of slot in with a lot of the Ghibli films, but then you're kind of looking and it's like, it's still not particularly great. And honestly, I was a bit disappointed in it because coming off In This Corner of the World and even My Miracle, I was really hyped up for this, and then I was just like...
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. I mean, the director, Sunao Katabuchi, you got his name right, by the way. The director learned a lot over the years, because he also directed Black Lagoon.
Yeah, that was one of the other ones. I mean, honestly, he does really great female leads.
Yeah, but the thing
at least
is,
he does now.
The thing is, he's learned how to do action as well, which is,
yeah,
you know, by doing Black Lagoon, he learned how to do action. And from there, you get stuff like In This Corner of the World, where it's very calm. So In This Corner of the World, the action scenes and stuff like that can be seen as, and the violence or the violent subtext of certain things in This Corner of the World, you can read it back and say, okay, it's a combination of various things he's learned from these things that he's done as a director. Would you recommend it?
See, I'm quite torn because I paid £20 for this, and I'm kind of thinking, no, it's not. I don't think it was worth the £20.
But
this
you also want other people to suffer as well, don't you?
Well, this is the collector's edition, and the collector's edition had the rigid box and 4 art cards in it, and that's the only thing that's a collector's. There's no special features or anything on it. But you can also get a normal DVD version of it for like £10. And I think if you really want to watch it, just get the DVD. It's probably worth the £10, but not the £20. You can get a decent series for that.
Okay, that's fair. Moving on from Princess What's-Her-Face.
Princess.
That was an Earthworm Jim reference. Did no one get that?
Yeah. I kind of twigged on once I started talking. I was like, oh, yeah.
I mean, my God, it's Earthworm Jim. It was amazing.
I know. I played the Mega Drive games.
Yeah, but I mean, who had that fevered cheese dream where they suddenly woke up in the middle of the night and said, I've got it. We put a worm in a space suit.
A super-powered spacesuit.
Yeah, a super-powered spacesuit.
And give him a dog as a sidekick.
Give him a dog as a sidekick and give him a laser pistol, because worms apparently have hands.
There's an entire generation of people who don't know who Earthworm Jim is.
He's such a mighty guy.
He is.
Earthworm Jim.
Hooray for Jim. Anyway,
Jimmy.
Yes, on the subject of hoorays and hoorahs and huzzahs and all that, Crunchyroll did their anime awards. Now,
you say it loosely as their anime awards. Let's put this out there first. This is their. By their, it's
I
like
did say
their
there.
Panel of expert and fan polls, I believe.
See, this is the thing. Number one, I want to raise the issue of Crunchyroll waiting until the end of February, March time. And I know it falls in the middle of award season in general with the Oscars and the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes and stuff like that. And I reckon they purposely waited until now to put their awards out because they feel it kind of legitimizes their awards to a degree. But the other thing that I want to raise is that they've mainly focused on stuff that was on Crunchyroll instead of stuff that had been out in general.
Actually, when I'm actually looking at the nominations, for a lot of them, the stuff that's on is actually a bit of a mix. I mean, yeah, there is a lot of Crunchyroll stuff on, but there is a lot of Amazon and Netflix titles on there as well. For example, the anime of the year, for the nominations they had, March Comes in Like a Lion Season 2, which was Crunchyroll. They had Made in Abyss, which was Amazon.
Yeah.
Land of the Lustrous, which was Amazon. My Hero Academia, which was Crunchyroll.
Yeah, my point.
Bakugou, which was Crunchyroll, and Little Witch Academia, which was Netflix. So actually half of the ones that had in for Anime of the Year were non-Crunchyroll.
So you're saying the Anime of the Year was what?
The one that won was actually Made in Abyss.
Okay.
It's not being completely a mix, but I can't exactly just say, just being Crunchyroll stuff.
No, my point was that it's primarily Crunchyroll stuff that won.
Well, to be honest, primarily it's been My Hero Academia.
Yeah. Anime of the Year, they couldn't really go against Made in Abyss because if they chose anything else other than Made in Abyss, there would be a backlash, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke highly of it, didn't we? I mean, a lot of the stuff that they did have in Anime of the Year, I mean, they had Rakugou and March Comes in Like a Lion. Both of them, I would completely agree that they are worth being in. My Hero Academia, not really, but it was the popular one. But to be honest, for me, the stuff that kind of is annoying us with this award list is the amount of stuff that My Hero Academia won when I personally feel that they shouldn't have even been nominated for them.
Okay, let's go through a few of them.
Are we doing winners or we're just doing the nominations?
We'll have a look at the winners as well. I mean, I've noticed they've got, like, Best Manga, which is My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness.
I have to disagree.
See, I did enjoy that. It was good. I wouldn't say it's the best, because they did have Golden Kamuy in that in the running for that as well.
Yeah.
And they also had...
My Brother's Husband.
Rakugou they had in as well.
Yeah.
And they also had Delicious and Dungeon. I thought they had Promised Neverland, but they didn't.
No, they don't. Like they've got actual good stuff in the list, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Manga of the Year, I feel like the nominations, all of them were pretty strong. I did enjoy the winner of it, but I'm not really that bothered about the Manga of the Year. Well, I don't think it's a bit of a... I don't think it's a that winning is a discredit to the others.
Well, I kind of have to disagree, because when you're looking at manga, you're not just looking at the story content, you're looking at the whole package. In the same way that when you're looking at anime, if you're going to choose the anime of the year, you can't just look at the story, you've got to look at the whole package. What was it like on production? What was it like on the voice acting? What was it like in its choice of music? Does it tick all of these boxes? You can't simply sit there and go, I thought this one was the best because it made me feel tingly inside.
Oh well, that's the thing that I got me with the whole thing for the Crunchyroll Awards. I mean, I want to see reasoning for why a lot of these things were even nominated. I mean, when we did ours, we gave reasons why nearly all of the things were even mentioned.
Yeah, we've got like our arguments about explaining.
This is just kind of like, well, the best anime overall is this one. Okay, explain why this one's the best.
Just this one.
Let's start off with the obvious one, Best Animation. And so your nominations were Made in Abyss, Little Witch Academia, which I highly disagree with anyway, Land of the Lustrous. Actually, no, let's not start with that one.
I do want to point something out with this one.
Yeah.
This had Best Animation. So I had Land of the Lustrous, My Hero Academia, Little Witch, March Comes in Like a Lion, Miss Kobayashi, and then A Silent Voice. So A Silent Voice has a huge budget as a film, then surely that's probably going to have more of a chance for Best Animation.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. They chose My Hero Academia Season 2. What did I choose when I said Best Animation?
I can't remember. Did we give it to a movie?
No, we didn't. I chose Land of the Lustrous, remember? We all chose different ones, but yeah. We all justified it. And I said Land of the Lustrous beat everything, literally everything, hands down. when it came to animation in a series. The only thing that could actually rival it to a degree was Made in Abyss and was it season 2 of March Comes Like a Lion?
Yeah. See, a lot of all of this has been voted by the public as well, so...
Yeah, I know.
Well, I don't know how they do it. Do they do it like experts and then...
Basically, what happens is they've got a team of judges, which looks to be about 10 people. There's 10 of them. They pick the nominations, and then they went up to a voting thing. You had about a month to vote for everything, and then the public just voted for whatever ones they wanted.
I'm sorry, but that's a very Watch Mojo way of going about things, which is, I'll be honest, I really, really do not like that method of doing things. It kind of makes me angry. Because at the end of the day, if you are putting your faith in something to give you the skinny on whether something is good or bad, is it worth watching or not, then these people need to put their money where their mouth is. They need to put their reputations on the line and justify this is what we decided and this is the reason why. So anyway, Anime of the Year, Made in Abyss, we know that.
What's something next? We all agree with.
Yeah. See, I don't understand this one that they've got Best Hero, Best Villain, Best Boy, Best Girl.
But we did Best Waifu. We didn't do Best Husbando.
No, we didn't. So their best girl is Uraraka from My Hero Academia, and their best boy is Todoroki from My Hero Academia. Whereas their nominations had Rei Kiriyama, Kazuma, Izuku, Deku, Midoriya, Fafnir, Yakumo.
That's the thing that I don't get. It's like, they've got Fafnir for the best boy from Dragon Maid. Well, surely one of the girls from Dragon Maid would have gotten for best girl.
Well, this was best boy, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This kind of seems like it's weird. Well, even then, they had two characters from My Hero Academia for best boy.
Yeah, so I know.
It's not really dilute. It's kind of like very.
I mean, this is the thing, and the same for best girl. When you've got two characters from a series in there, you should limit it to one per series.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, best villain, Tanya from,
Tanya the Evil.
Yeah.
But I thought Tanya the Evil was the hero of that series.
She's the protagonist.
Mean, she's more of an anti-hero, which is not like a...
Yeah, she's just a career-driven person.
Yeah.
I take very strong, opinion of the fact they got that wrong by picking Stain. Because... He's not really so much a villain as much. He goes around, stabs a few heroes, and he's got an idealistic point of view. Whereas you take someone like Hiro Shishigami from Inuyashiki.
Yeah.
And, you know, dude's been given robotic powers. He's practically invincible. Goes around killing people for fun. Kills a father and drowns the son in the process. You know, that is pure evil. And, he's not villain of the year. No, let's give it to this bloke who looks kind of badass and has a knife.
But the thing is, though, we've got to remember, My Hero Academia was not only on Crunchyroll, but it was a lot more popular than most of these other things as well. And this is all what it comes down to. Most people haven't seen Made in Abyss or Land of the Lustrous or Inuyashiki or anything, or half of the stuff that's on here. They've watched My Hero Academia, they've watched Attack on Titan, and that was probably about it for the year. So they've just voted for the characters they know.
That's where the big flaw is, because it's kind of like, you know how we say, like, the Oscars animation thing, most of it's like Disney, because Disney pay for the sponsorship. It's the same with these Crunchyroll awards. Crunchyroll, obviously, it's going to be biased towards Crunchyroll, because the main fan base that they ask is Crunchyroll viewers.
Yeah, and this is the fundamental issue when it comes to the awards. This is one of the reasons why I dislike this whole idea of a formal. If you could have an independent awards ceremony, it wouldn't be independent for long because people would want to get involved. They'd want to sponsor you, blah, blah, blah. And so if they give you money, they would want you to toe the line and say, and basically push their things forward ahead of everybody else.
I kind of feel that's went the way with this because My Hero Academia is a big Funimation property. And I kind of feel, Funimation had voice actors there at the awards ceremony itself. And I've got no evidence to say that there's some kind of conspiracy or Funimation's paying for these awards, but it kind of feels like it's really geared towards Funimation titles rather than the whole spectrum of anime.
Well, This is interesting because we had the same argument last year when the Crunchyroll Awards came around and Yuri on Ice was put in for literally almost every single nomination that had gone for it.
Yeah.
And that won nearly everything as well.
Yeah, but
there's a lot of people arguing whether or not it should have been on for many of them, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's 2 years in a row that the very popular series has won it, both of them Funimation titles.
Well, let's put it this way. Let's look at action for a second. So My Hero Academia, again, won Best Action. But in there was Land of the Lustrous, Blood Blockade, Battlefront, and Beyond, which a lot of people in the West seem to have forgotten is an actual thing. Mobile Suit Gundam, Iron-Blooded Orphans, which has amazing action. And if you remember, Mark, that was my pick.
Yeah, I think that was one of our shortlist ones, wasn't it?
Yeah, over and above My Hero Academia. Because when it comes to action, it's all nice being flashy and stuff like that, but what's the limit of that? What's the consequence of it? I mean, in My Hero Academia, it's basically a typical shonen title in which they all fight and then they recover. Nobody actually dies.
Yeah, just flashy end moves that you have to shout before you do it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Exactly. Best drama was The Ancient Magus Bride, which, okay, fine. I'm not complaining about that winning. And I'll be honest, looking at the shortlist that they had, Descending Stories, March Comes Like a Lion Season 2, Maiden Abyss, Ancient Magus Bride, Scum's Wish, and Aka 13 Territory Inspection Department, that's a pretty strong shortlist.
Yeah, I think for some of them, when they narrow it down, it does work. Even the comedy one, they had Dragon Maid, Osomatsu-san Season 2, Little Witch Academia, maybe not, Konosuba, which was the one that I shortlisted.
Yeah.
Gamers and Tsuderi Children.
I wouldn't put Gamers in comedy. Like, it's more of a teen romantic.
I wouldn't.
There's no funny, really.
It still is. It still is a pretty strong one. Slice of Life, MMO Junkie, Suki Ga Kiri, I'm not sure what that is. Girls Last Tour, Kimono Friends, Sakura Quest, and Interviews with Monster Girls.
See, the thing is,
again, I would agree. I would agree that the stuff in there should have been nominated.
My first question with the Best Slice of Life, my very first question on this is, okay, fine, you can have your slice of life. Where the fuck is Hermes?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Mark,
do you actually know what I'm talking about?
I heard of it.
I'm talking about the talking motorbike.
Mm-hmm. Off the.
Yeah, where the hell is Kino's Journey?
It wasn't popular enough, man.
But it's Kino's Journey. It's like one of the slice of life anime. Wasn't there a chunk of Aria that came out? Was it last year or the year before? I can't remember.
I can't remember.
I think it was last year.
So where the hell is that? The thing is, Aria is literally the queen of slice of life. It's the one that does it the best, better than any other anime.
The whole thing contradicts itself. It's got best continuing series. March Comes In Like a Lion, which won it. Fair enough. Iron Blood Orphans, Dragon Ball Super, Case Closed, Detective Conan, All Out. Don't know why that's in there. Naruto. But if you think, though, best continuing series, My Hero Academia isn't in there, but how come My Hero Academia was shoehorned into every single other thing? So if My Hero Academia can win all of these things, but it can't win, even be nominated for Best Continuing Series, does this just mean that they're just making it up as they go along?
Well, that's the oxymoronic thing about it. It's the fact that it's like My Hero Academia wins everything, but can't win Best Anime of the Year.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Dragon Ball Super is not a continuation of the Dragon Ball series. It's a completely separate series in the Dragon Ball universe.
I think it's just because it started before last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why. Same with Naruto Shippuden. Obviously, that's been continued All Out. I thought there was only one series of that.
Yeah, but then why have March Comes Like a Lion in there?
Because it's season two, isn't it? So it's continuing on from season one.
Yeah, and that's my point. Just because it started the year before doesn't automatically mean it's continuing. That would be ongoing.
Ongoing, did Shokugeki no Soma get anywhere in there?
No, wasn't even nominated.
Do you see this?
I didn't see it in any of it.
I know
Naruto got in. Naruto shipping him. We're on Boruto right now.
Yeah.
Which should be Boruto. That's the best continuing series. But not shipping him.
You see what I'm saying? Ongoing means that it hasn't broken its programming. It's continued running. Whereas continuing means it's taken a break and now it's continuing. That's why you, at the end of some episodes, you have to be continued.
Yeah.
So a continuation of a series means the series has taken a break for a while. There's a gap there and it's come back. You're on the second season or the third season. So Dragon Ball Super shouldn't be in there. Naruto Shippuden shouldn't be in there.
No, I agree. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's just contradicting.
Yeah.
Best film's actually pretty strong. I mean, there's one noticeable exception in there in that, because best film, obviously, they had A Silent Voice, Your Name, which, speaking from our point of view, that was the year before, but I'll let it slide since this is an Americans and...
Yeah.
Girls and Panzer, yeah. In This Corner of the World, yeah. Kizumonogatari Monogatari 3.
No,
maybe. Shouldn't be there.
No,
shouldn't be there. More because, I mean, I enjoyed it, but... It's part three, and you can't legally get one and two. Fate's Day and Night.
Heaven's Feel. Yeah. That should be there.
So where was Night of Short Walk on go?
Because Masaki Yuasa is an auteur, and I mean that in the truest sense. He is a proper auteur, right? He's not one of those fly-by-night people who gets called an auteur just because he does things a little bit different. Looking at Kojima from Metal Gear fame. Masaki Yuasa probably does things that are weird and wacky and wonderful. He pushes the envelope. He tries to challenge people with his style, with the aesthetic of his work, with just the music, the noise, the energy of everything that he does.
Yeah.
And the final result is really entertaining.
Yeah. Two films that aren't on there that really should have been on there. Lou Over the Wall, Night of Short Walk on Go.
Definitely, I would definitely remove Kizumonogatari and Fate's Day and Night for both of them.
Well, I'd remove Girls on Panzer, Der Film, and Kizumonogatari. Well, no, actually, let's be fair. I would remove Kizumonogatari and Your Name, because technically Your Name was out the year before.
Yeah, yep. Like you said, this is going off America, so they only got it last year, didn't they?
Yeah, God. Anyway, I think we've
mined this enough. Let's put it this way: we didn't really agree with more or less everything that they did.
Can I show on one thing that really pissed me off? It was the best opening. In fact, they had Aka 13 on there, which should have won out of the list of there, but there was no Inuyashiki, and that was the best goddamn opening. My Hero is an amazing song, and the fact that they've went with My Hero Academia's opening is an absolute disgrace, and I will fight anyone who like disagrees with that.
Well, you're not going to hear any disagreement from me. I actually liked Inuyashiki's opening theme. I've made the point before, and I've told you guys about this before as well, there's an art to doing a good opening and ending sequence for anime. The opening sequence in particular is basically an AMV, the way it's put together, the composition, everything like that, and making sure that you don't give away the goddamn story, as some of these studios are want to do when they do their opening sequence. You're like,
it's happening more often now as well, which is worrying.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because they're trying to cater to the American market, and I'm sorry, but the American market is a bloody stupid market to cater to. Cater to the global market. Leaving those to one side, we're going to talk about something that got sorely overlooked in the awards with Best Action and Best Animation and various things like that. Because I've got to say, production-wise, this still does hold up in a lot of ways. It has its own very, very distinct art style. The animation was very good in general.
Great use of CG as well.
Yeah, it had great use of CG. It had great effects work. It had a very powerful soundtrack, I'd say. Rather than atmospheric or anything like that, it was very strong and it was very in your face. It had some good voice acting in the Japanese dub, not so much in the English dub.
I would disagree with the English dub because I know the backstory of how much pain they've went through.
Well, you can tell me about that now, Tucky, because we are obviously talking about, well, we're not obviously, we are talking about Attack on Titan Season 2. I think it's out now, isn't it, from Funimation and Sony Pictures on DVD.
Yeah, it's out now. If you've got Crunchyroll, you can have the Japanese dub. If you've got the Funimation app or whatever widget it is on the PS4, you can watch it on there, as I did.
Yeah, well, and, the DVD has both dubs.
Oh, the DVD's got both.
Yes.
So yeah, I don't have the DVD because I've already watched it twice now. And I've revisited. This was a series that season one, as we all know, it made such an impact. But this is Attack on Titan. It's obviously a decent horror anime, and it's this huge commercial juggernaut now.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, season two for me was kind of crap. However,
yeah.
However, it's not crap for the reasons you think.
Okay.
Because season two actually improves on season one.
Yeah.
It's a really good anime. Say I'm being very Jekyll and Hyde with this today.
Are you going to talk about the gap in between seasons?
Well, no, it's not so much the gap in between seasons, because season one came in and obviously everybody wanted to cosplay it. Everybody was talking about it. We all had the Colossal Titan cosplay where the little gif where they're walking across the top of the wall and flipping people off and
yeah,
flinging shells at Luigi at conventions and what have you, you know. That's all part of it. But season two, the actual anime, the actual animation, we have waited a bit for it.
Yeah.
And obviously you'd expect it because season one, as I think I've said before in the previous review of season one, it was kind of rushed. It was one of the things where the manga was such a hit. It was like raw horror and gore and blood and all that jazz. And then we came to season two and we thought like, oh, we're going to get this soon. And then they kept pushing it back and back and back.
Yeah.
Until we actually got it like a few years delayed. But it's a good thing it's delayed. Because one of the big bugbears that we have on here is that sometimes an anime, when it becomes like a viable commercial success, it sometimes feels that it's really rushed. It's because I'm talking, I'm going to hear myself.
I think it's because you're raising your voice because you're passionate about it, Tucky.
Passion reverb! Oh, that's where you're coming back. Anyway, so in season two, rather than focus on Eren, which was the first one, you know, it's like, yeah. Oh no, his mother's died. Oh look, he's joined this survey corps. Oh look, he really, really hates Titans. Oh look, he's a Titan. Oh, what's in his dad's basement? I bet it's porn. Instead of that, they've decided to focus on the characters and actually built the world around Eren.
Yes, and the thing is, that's directly following on from the manga, because that's exactly what Hajime Isayama did. He opened it with a bang, and he went with the story for a while, and then he started focusing on the other characters. But the thing is, his focus on the other characters came a lot earlier than it does in the anime, to a degree. So he started building the characters a lot earlier in the manga. There's a reason why the anime had to cut those bits out. It's obvious it's transitioning from one medium to another, so you can forgive that. One of the things that I found a little bit annoying was, you know, all the brutality and stuff from the first season.
Yeah.
It felt like they were toning it down without toning it down. So it was kind of censoring the blood and gore without actually censoring it. So you have scenes where, for example, the Titan lifts the guy up to bite him in half and then it's hidden by a tree, you know, a conveniently placed tree. And you're like, why don't you just show it? We've seen it in the manga.
I mean, there's a point where I believe it was Marlowe, the character, where he's had a horse chucked at him.
Yeah.
He's on the floor and the weird big nosed Titans like eating him. And there's a bit where like his head gets ripped off. It's like, you know, where you know, I've got no example for this, but if a human's head's ripped off, you'd expect it to tear from the neck. Because they usually go, oh, well, you know, you decapitated your neck organ. But on this, it's like the actual top of the skull only gets tore open. And obviously, I mean, they don't show it full, like with blood and that, it kind of goes to shadow for some reason. But I believe the gore's still there. And what one of the things that impressed us about season two was they took the gore a little bit further and added a bit more suspense on it.
Yeah.
Because you've had Titans in season one. You know what you're expecting. Season two, now you get Titans, but at night. in the dark.
Yeah, and they'll have like the glowing eyes and stuff like that at times, so they've added that suspenseful horror element to it. Just talking about the voice acting for a moment, because you said there were all sorts of trials and tribulations for the American voice actors. Yeah. So what exactly is the deal there?
Well, this goes because I've had the pleasure of meeting Bryce Papenbrook and Trisha Nakamura, who are Mick Hassler and Erin.
Yeah.
In the anime. But speaking to Bryce, he says like some of the lines I has to do, he has to stand in the booth. And because Erin's so angry all the time, and especially the part where he's a Titan, he's had to have this like really gruff voice, and voice actors have to do things like 10, 20 times.
Yeah.
If you've got a sadistic director, like sometimes 50 to 100, you know, just to get that one voice line right. And he was saying like the part where he's had to like be really gruff and rugged and scream his lines. Like he's had like a whole paragraph, like 2-3 pages of just him screaming. And he's had to do that over and over again. Like he's actually tore his vocal cords physically, which is quite a strain on it. I mean, I understand the Japanese voice actors will have the same issue. Gives a whole new like respect for them, because sometimes it's just like, oh, you think they're these like kind of diva-ish actors who just go into a voice booth, they've got a script, they'll read off it in their funny little voice and they'll go away. But sometimes some people have to put so much passion and effort into it that you've got to respect the fact that, you know, what they're doing just to get one line right.
No, I understand that. And that's not my issue with the American dub. My issue has never been with the actors. And this is one of the reasons I feel I have to keep clarifying. My issue in general is not with the actors, because the actors are doing a job as best they can. Well, most of them are. The ones who aren't, you know who you are. And I'm just going to leave it at that. But what it comes down to is the actual script is my issue with the American dub. And it's... See, the acting was fine. You know, the acting was good. I liked it. And they were trying to convey that range of emotions, but the script is what helps them convey that range of emotions, right? And if you have the right words, they can basically project better. But what they've tried to do with the script, they basically tried to do a more intuitive script, more intuitive dialogue. So it's not a literal translation of the Japanese dub or just reading off the subtitles. They've actually tried to make it flow better. And I applaud the fact that they've tried to do that. It's just maybe have somebody check over your work before you hand it to the actors to make sure that your sentences actually make sense.
Do you have any examples?
There were a couple of examples, like Imid, for example, when she's saying stuff to Historia, or Krista, as she was at that point. And the sentence doesn't quite make sense, and it's supposed to be an emotional scene, but to somebody like me who is, you know, I'm a bit of a grammar Nazi anyway. Grammar Nazi. Let me clear that. Grammar Nazi.
Not grandma Nazi.
No. But it's just certain ways of saying things don't ring true in either UK English or in American English. It just doesn't quite flow. And I can understand from the voice actor's perspective, in fact, from any actor's perspective. I mean, it'd be as if you wanted to, say, take the dialogue from Attack on Titan and put a Shakespeare-ish twist on there, so people spoke in these and thous and for as muches and stuff like that, and then have the voice actors do that. It would be uncomfortable for them, and they wouldn't be able to project the emotion properly, would they? And that's what I mean when I say maybe have somebody check over it a little bit and say, okay, maybe change this word for this. You know, you don't have to be highbrow here. You can be kind of lowbrow. These guys are grunts. They're soldiers. They're not going to use, like, really formal language with each other.
Well, you see, when you say that, I mean, J. Michael Tatum's the one who wrote the script, I believe. And knowing who he is and the kind of person he is, he's very posh, but he's not posh. If you follow. He's very well-spoken, absolutely fantastic French.
Yeah.
And I can kind of see that, like, you know, tone down your nobility.
Yeah. Do you see what I mean? Because these characters... These characters are teenagers, but they're also soldiers. And how many soldiers have you spoken to, Tucky?
Quite a few, actually, in my life, thinking about it.
And how many of them spoke in a very formal, clipped manner?
Absolutely none. In fact, one of them claimed to be the inventor of binge drinking.
Do you see what I mean? And so this is what I mean. I understand that this is one of the reasons why the dialogue just doesn't quite work for me in the American dub. You know, he's gone for the intuitive approach, and I really do recommend that approach for dubs. I think it's the best approach to take.
Just have them a bit more common.
Yeah. Tone down the language a little bit so they're a bit more common than that level, and it would flow so much better because you feel like the characters have actually bonded enough to relax with each other. And especially towards the middle of the series when you have the big reveal about things, which, you know, I'm being purposefully vague because there are still people...
I don't think you need to. See, this is my biggest problem with Attack on Titan. That was not a big reveal.
What?
I thought that was blatantly obvious. The big reveal was blatantly obvious in the first episode of the first season.
Which big reveal? The beast, who the beast titan is?
Titans are?
Titan and the armor titan.
Oh, yeah.
He's got exactly the same hair as that titan. Oh, they're all half the characters are turning into titans. Oh, well, it must be some kind of power-up type thing, like in the Shonen. No, it's not.
That's the thing, it wasn't meant to be a reveal, it was just something that was hinted at, but the fact is people perceived it as a big reveal, like a big mystery, but no, that wasn't the intention, it's just, you know.
Luckily, like, people have read the manga, and most of, like, the proper fans, like, you know, they don't wait for the anime, they will read ahead, and at the moment we're, like, up to grown-up Eren, after a time skip thing, but... That's the manga. Read the manga. If you like Attack on Titan, read the manga.
No,
for me reading the manga, it was a case of the anime kind of same rush, but then they've got the pacing right with season two.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know for a fact it's for commercial reasons because they've got so much more merch that can push. I'm not too fond on the whole Attack on Titan high school chibi bollocks side thing that they're doing.
They do that with all of them, which is one of the reasons why I said, well, hang on, if they're doing a high school version of all of these, how are they going to handle My Hero Academia?
My baby Academia.
There's so many links into My Hero Academia and what they're doing here. And it'll bring us full circle around as to why I thought it was a bit crap, even though I'm saying it's a really good anime.
Okay.
Because, you know, you've got... For the first time, I've realized that it's kind of like it's the external factors which are affecting my enjoyment of the anime now. Because Attack on Titan, with it being as big as it is, every single week there was a new episode. They did like the simul dubs and they do like weekly episodes up until a certain point. And every week, some douche on the internet would break down an episode into funny memes. And like, ha, look, this Titan's leaning like seductively on a door. Oh, look, he's just been hit by a horse. Or, you know, like funny little like Christina's headbutt thing. If you watch it, you'll know what I mean.
So you're basically saying like One Piece fans with the latest chapter of One Piece, how they break it all down and examine it.
I haven't caught up with it yet.
One Piece fans do exactly the same thing with the latest chapter of One Piece, and they'll basically do all these blog posts and all the, you know, some of them do YouTube videos about it. And they're all saying, oh this, that, oh, this could possibly mean this. You're like, just read the goddamn manga. Read it.
I keep that to the side, and this is the thing. In this day and age where the internet is, and we can all have like a grown-up conversation about our favorite shows, and my timeline was absolutely flooded with GIFs of Attack on Titan, and it's where you want, and when you want to watch the anime itself, especially if it's like ahead of you watching the anime, it kind of devolves like the episode into, oh well, that's that gif, oh well, that's I now get what that meme is. They're doing it with My Hero Academia,
yeah, but they're gonna do that with everything popular. So you're basically saying it's crap because the fans are crap.
Well, no, that's the thing. The fans are ruining anime. Fandoms of anime is a ruining anime for me.
Anything ruins anything as far as I'm concerned.
I hate to say it to somebody who actually runs conventions for anime. But unfortunately, that's what the internet brings us.
Oh no, I understand. This is the day and age of memes. You know, anything that happens, somebody will take the piss out of it. The Queen will die. There'll be loads of people taking the piss out of the Queen dying.
Yeah, but this is the thing.
Disrespectful, and
this is the
Jacob Rees-Mogg will be online like complaining about it. But this is the society we live in now.
Consider it like this, though, Tucky. It ruins it for you, but think about it like this: for your parents, you know, you ruin stuff for your parents, and your parents ruin stuff for your grandparents because that's just the way we work. That's just humans being humans. This whole thing with memes is, from my perspective, it's going to pass. It's just a growth thing. It's just people on the internet slowly becoming more mature, and it'll be replaced by other things in the future. It will be. Something else will take its place, and things will move on. Anime is becoming more and more mainstream, and because it's becoming more and more mainstream, you are seeing this rise in memes. I mean, go back 10, 15 years. How many memes based on popular shows did you see on the internet?
Barely one.
Exactly. But now that anime has come out of the shadows, it's now in the limelight. It's everywhere.
Well,
everybody,
no, this is the
knows
thing.
What it is.
The thing with memes and GIFs and all the funny things and that is it kind of ruins it. Like when you want to really watch an anime,
yeah,
it kind of takes that snapshot of something good. Like let's take Sasha. Her character development was key in this. No longer is she some like potato whore or whatever they're calling her.
Yeah.
You know, she's not some lass that's just addicted to potatoes. No, she's addicted to all food. And it's what you'd expect because it's the times they live in. The rations are very sparse. And she's a lass who likes her grub. And they've got this scene where she's facing off against this titan. It's just her and one arrow left against the half-blind titan. And to save this little lass. And she just goes in and, like a badass, just sticks the arrow in with her hand. It's like, screw this, I'm not using the bow. I'm just going to stick it in with my hand and run like hell. And, you know, that's a fantastic character development right there. It's like, no, she's no longer just some hungry person.
Yeah.
You know, she's actually this badass character.
I understand that. But my point is that this whole thing with the memes, video games went through exactly the same thing. And it's something that will eventually disappear. It's just a phase.
I don't think it'll disappear.
It will.
I think it'll be continued. As long as Crunchyroll are sharing Pop Team Epic, disappear from anime.
Again, it's part of the maturing process. It's happened with every single form of media that's become popular. Video games had it.
We can only hope for that because, yeah. Like I say, I'm watching Attack on Titan Season 2, and this was like when everybody's talking about it, and it's still going. And I got up to like episode 4, and because of all of the oversaturation of commercialism, obviously it's a part of the thing. You know, they've got to sell stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to sell the manga. They've got to sell merchandise. They've got to make money somehow. Got no problem with that.
Do you know what's actually quite interesting when you're saying about the merchandise?
Hmm.
Yeah.
The merchandise for Attack on Titan Season 2 has done abysmally bad.
Yeah.
They can't even shift it. They couldn't shift the Season 1 stuff after about a year.
This is one of the reasons why when we did our awards, technically they were awards, I suppose, but why I said Attack on Titan was in the bad timing award for me, because they waited too long. The ardour had cooled, and that's why the second season did perform as well as the first season. Yes, technically it was superior to the first season in terms of its production, in terms of a lot of things, it was superior to the first season. But in terms of the audience reception, you had the diehard fans, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah, because the fandom's buggered off to My Hero Academia to go and ruin that.
This is what I'm saying, Tucky. You can like or hate the fans, but that doesn't mean that the series is bad per se because the fans are bad. See, I've got a sneaking suspicion they're going to see how things go with Season 3. And if it doesn't go well, then it's going to go on hiatus like Full Metal Panic has done.
What is it, My Hero or Attack on Titan?
Attack on Titan.
No, Attack on Titan.
Oh, that's been announced for July, actually. Sorry about that. I thought it was April, because My Hero's in April.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I reckon they'll look at how it performs for Season 3, and then they might just basically shelve the anime adaptations for several years.
Hopefully not,
well.
Because for the...
They will. It depends how close to the manga they're going to get.
They can't gauge it just on the basis of Season 2 because they've got an imbalance. They've got Season 1, which did phenomenal business, And then they got season two, which didn't do as well. It didn't do anywhere near as well, and they thought it would. So season three is the make or break. If it underperforms, and underperforms to a certain degree, then they'll probably say, okay, we're not going to do any more anime adaptations. We're just going to put it to one side for now. We'll come back to it in a few years' time.
Well, it's got to be a commercially viable thing, hasn't it? Because it's all about business with the Japanese anime. And that's one of some things that anime fans don't realise is that it has to make money. If it doesn't make money, it's getting chucked.
That's what happened with Full Metal Panic. This is the thing.
It didn't generate as much hype as Season 1, probably for the simple reasons that it was half as long as Season 1.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's exactly what happened with Full Metal Panic. Full Metal Panic had the first series, which I think was 26 episodes. Then they had Fumofu, which was all comedy, and I've not met many people who dislike Fumofu, I'll be honest. And then they did the second raid, which was a much better series than the first season, because the first season was all... It was primarily anime original stuff, but the second raid was very heavily based on the novels. But the second raid didn't do anywhere near as well as the first season.
No, it didn't.
The thing is, some of these is that they need more than just a standard 10, 12, 13 episodes to really build that sort of momentum.
Yeah,
Attack on Titan, if the first season was still 10, 12 episodes, because it generated the amount of hype that it did originally.
Yeah. Anyway, final consensus. Is Attack on Titan Season 2 good or not?
Yes.
God, Mark, say it's not.
But yeah, honestly, I wasn't a fan of the first one. I went in, I've made sure I left the year Season 2 for when the hype, what little of it was, died down. And I thought it was better than Season 1, but I still didn't think it was worth shouting about.
See,
I think it's worth it. I think it's worth the time and effort of putting into it. It's shorter than the first season, so you're not going to have that dragged out feeling. Stay away from the fandom. Stay away from the memes. Watch it. Take in the horror aspect, the gore aspect. Follow the storyline carefully. And if you can, read the manga. Read ahead.
Absolutely.
Know what's coming, and you will enjoy it a lot more.
See, I'm of the opinion that...
phenomenal.
Yeah. See, I'm of the opinion that when it comes to Attack on Titan, you're really enjoying it for the spectacle. The story is there, but you're really there for the spectacle. You're really there for the event. And so, if you are going to watch Season 2, then I would heavily recommend doing a big marathon session and doing Season 1 first and carrying straight on.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would work a lot better.
Yeah, rather than waiting. And then when Season 3 comes out, maybe do the same thing again. Watch Season 1 and 2 first and then go straight into Season 3 and marathon it. Because
it's got great rewatch value. Yeah. I'll give it that.
Yeah, it does have absolutely a very high rewatch value. And I've got to agree, for me, Attack on Titan has always been a solid performer. It's always been a solid show. It's always been entertaining and gruesome and everything like that. Yeah, okay, the characters for me are a little bit... they're not all there. And I don't mean that they're a little bit crazy. I mean, just the characters themselves, there are issues, but I forgive those because the spectacle is what keeps me. It's like saying John McClane in Die Hard is not a perfect character because of such and such a reason, but you don't watch Die Hard for that, do you?
Exactly. Yeah.
You watch it for Bruce Willis walking over glass barefoot.
Yeah, you watch it for, now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho. Right, let's end this. Right, okay, so that's your lot for this week. We'll be back next week with more animated goodies for everybody. All of our shows are available on the Geek Show Podcast Network, which is on Apple Podcasts and Audioboom, or you can find our shows on our website as well, where you'll find our Patreon. So if you can, support us. Give us some of your lovely monies, which will help us grow and expand. But anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, you'll find us on Facebook or Twitter. We do have our own Twitter, which is Mark.
At Keyframe Podcast.
And I really do just need to record you saying that.
It's all right, I'm used to it now.
They're doing it many different things, like at Keyframe Podcast.
At Keyframe Podcast. At Keyframe Podcast.
Was that the Ringo version of it at the end there?
One lovely morning on the island of Sodo. Thomas tweeted to at Keyframe Podcast. Love your show, guys. Keep it up. James wasn't a fan.
Yeah. Or you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Mark.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Bye.
Start seductively, go out seductively. I'm still wearing that negligee if anyone's interested.